You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Oh, thanks for having me this morning. Really grateful to see you guys out. I picked this topic because this is something that I really enjoy. I love reading. I've enjoyed seeing my kids learn to love reading, but it does not come naturally or easily. Before I even get into some of the benefits of reading and then practical suggestions, part of the reason I love reading is because I was actually raised in a household with very little TV. That was one of the benefits of my parents' parenting style is, you know, I was allowed like maybe an hour of TV a week. So I grew up with a benefit that most people do not have. However, even though I was raised that way and was raised with a lot of books and, you know, library time, I also didn't have very many friends when I was little, so books were my friends. So, you know, that's not a happy reason, but it was a happy outcome. There was still a significant period of life where I was on the screen constantly, and I went from being a reader to, I've heard the term lapsed reader. So I spent many years not really reading that much, and I had to regain the ability to focus for a period of time and the enjoyment of reading. So if you are here today and you are a non-reader, if you are here today and you are a lapsed reader or an ex-reader or a guilty ex-reader, whatever category you fit in, anybody can learn to love reading. And part of my goal today is to make this seem accessible and possible, and to help you not just feel bad about your reading. So, becoming a reader, I specifically worded it that way because the goal for today is not to help people read more, but to become a reader, and I think that's different. Viewing ourselves as people who read, that's kind of an identity, as opposed to goals in reading or how much we're trying to accomplish. And there's a lot of reasons to strive for this. One is there's a lot of spiritual benefits that come from reading. Now, if you get into the scriptures, you see the way that God talks about readers. Paul, at the end of his life, he tells Timothy, when you come to visit me, bring my scrolls, especially the parchments. And some of this, I'm sure, were the actual scriptures. He wanted the hard copies right in front of him. But some of it, we know from other areas of his life, was probably other literature that he wanted to enjoy. I mean, he's here in prison. He knows that the end of his life is approaching. And what value does he have? He's like, well, I want to be able to keep reading because I have a little time left. Think about in Daniel 1, where Daniel and his friends were exiled to Babylon. It says, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. So they were known as very wise because of all of the different things that they were exposed to. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It's fools that despise wisdom and instruction. So there's a lot of things that we want to be if we're going to follow God, and a learner is one of them. And one of the easiest ways to learn is by getting a hold of good material. Acts 17:28, this is Paul when he's out traveling around. This is him in Athens in the marketplace. And he quotes, as he's talking to people about God, he says, for in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. He's quoting two Greek philosophers. So he's not just reading good spiritual literature, but he's reading other literature that is out there and available so that he's aware of the way that people are thinking and what it is that people are into in the culture that he's trying to reach. And finally, in 2 Timothy 3, as Paul is talking to Timothy, he says, from childhood, you have known the sacred writings which are able to give you the wisdom that leads to salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. So here he is specifically talking about the scriptures. But he calls them the sacred writings, and he says through reading what God has written, that is what is able to bring anybody to an understanding of the faith that they need to have in Christ Jesus in order to have salvation. So people in Scripture really value reading, getting a hold of good works, and of course, you know, the primary thing that we want to be reading is God's Word. You know, he's spoken through the Bible, and to be able to read that on a regular basis is the main thing that's going to grow us in wisdom. But then there's all sorts of other things out there, and I want to argue that it's not just Christian books that are going to grow us in wisdom. And it's funny because on the one hand, you know, most people throughout all of human history didn't have the opportunity to read because books were just not that available. Books were incredibly expensive. They also just didn't have the time to read. You know, if you're farming 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, you're not going to have a bunch of free time. So on the one hand, we don't want to overstate the value of reading because most humans have grown in wisdom without access to the literature that we have today. On the other hand, we don't have to work as hard as they did. So we do have more time available on our hands, and books are far more accessible. So why not take advantage of what we have available to us? And I'm not saying that you guys are not working hard, all right? But I know I'm not growing my own grain and grinding it and making bread every single day to make sure that my children have enough to eat. I made the choice not to have a huge, large family, so I'm not trying to raise, you know, 17 kids like John Wesley grew up in a family of. Of course, every time you read about it, his mom had a different number of kids. But in whatever you read, she had a ton of kids because there was no birth control back then. So, you know, we are busy. Perhaps we're not as busy as we feel like we are. And there's time, and we can use that time the way that we want to. It's not just the spiritual benefits. There are other benefits as well, just from reading in general. So some research from the University of Liverpool. This was a 2015 study of over 4,000 adults in the UK. You'll notice the spelling is very British. Regular readers for pleasure reported fewer feelings of stress and depression than non-readers, and stronger feelings of relaxation from reading than from watching television, engaging with social media, or reading other leisure material, for example, celebrity, beauty, or style magazines. So feeling stressed out, turns out one of the best things to do is to maybe just read a book for fun. Reading creates a parallel world in which personal anxieties can recede, while also helping people to realize that the problems they experience are not theirs alone. So it kind of widens our perspective on other things that are going on that maybe put our problems in perspective. A fifth of respondents said reading helped them to feel less lonely because you're actually entering into the world of another person. Those who read for pleasure also have higher levels of self-esteem and a greater ability to cope with difficult situations, perhaps because they have expanded models and repertoires of experience, which allow them to look with new perspective and understanding on their own lives. Now, reading gets you into the problems of another person as well as how those problems get worked out, and so gives us access to different ways to approach things. Readers find it easier to make decisions, to plan and prioritize. And this may be because they're more able to recognize that difficulty and setback are unavoidable aspects of human life. Instead of freaking out when something goes wrong, it's like, oh. I mean, people ask me, why do you always read sad books? It's like, well, oftentimes the best books are the ones that really wrestle with some very complex problem. And oftentimes these are problems that I'm never going to have. But by reading books on other people's issues, it's just like, well, that was really hard, and then that person was able to get through it in some sort of way, and again, it just reminds me this is how a lot of people live. People who read regularly feel closer to their friends and to their community than lapsed or non-readers. Reading not only produces greater understanding and empathy with others, it also gives a currency for sharing experience more meaningfully than is possible in ordinary social conversation. Readers also had a stronger and more engaged awareness of social issues and of cultural diversity than non-readers. And I just read the second book in Maya Angelou's, it's either a 3 or 4 book series on, you know, her memoirs, and she's talking about living as an expat in Ghana. And I'm like, I am not a black woman who lived in Africa for a period of time. I don't know what that's like, but I'm reading her experience. And I'm learning about what that was like for her. So their conclusions and recommendations, readers feel happier about themselves and their lives. And reading for just 30 minutes a week has these benefits. It produces greater life satisfaction, enhances social connectedness and a sense of community spirit, and it helps protect and even prepare for life's difficulties. And what I like about that is 30 minutes a week can produce those benefits. John Green, the young adult novelist, says, reading forces you to be quiet in a world that no longer makes a place for that. There's something about just settling down and trying to enter into the argument of an author or the life experience of a character that just can settle our hearts. Everyone admits our culture has lost the value of being a reader. Now, this is kind of a running joke, and you talk to people, they're like, oh, I'm not a reader. And it's like, well, yeah, because you live in the West, and that's the way that it goes. If you want to know how our culture feels about things, what do you turn to? You turn to The Onion. This article, this is from like 13 years ago. It's titled, Nation Shudders at Large Block of Uninterrupted Text. They write, unable to rest their eyes on a colorful paragraph or boldface heading that could be easily skimmed and forgotten about, Americans collectively recoiled Monday when confronted with a solid block of uninterrupted text. Dumbfounded citizens from Maine to California gazed helplessly at the frightening chunk of print, unsure of what to do next. Without an illustration, chart, or embedded YouTube video to ease them in, millions were frozen in place, terrified by the sight of one long, unbroken string of English words. I've never seen anything like it, said Mark Shelton, a high school teacher from St. Paul, Minnesota, who stared blankly at the page in front of him for several minutes before finally holding it up to his ear. What does it want from us? I mean, I don't know if you guys have had this experience. Maybe it's just me, but, you know, even if you're on the internet and you pull up like a news article and you have to scroll down twice, it's like, well, I'm not going to read this whole thing. I'm just going to look at the pictures and then I'm going to move on. So, okay, we've lost the value of reading as a culture, but anyone who's a follower of Christ, we're trying to be different from our culture. So we don't just have to go the way of everybody else. We have the hope of being different. George R.R. Martin, through one of his characters, says, a reader lives 1,000 lives before he dies. The man who never reads lives only one. So wouldn't it be great to be able to live 1,000 lives before we die? The biggest barrier to being a reader, probably not that hard to guess, it's going to be the screen. The screen is going to not just shorten our attention span, but it comes and gets us. You know, there's the intermittent reinforcement. You never know when something new is going to be there. It's so frustrating to me that I am back to loving reading, and yet if my phone is anywhere near me, I swear it feels like my hand becomes a zombie hand, that I'm in the middle of a book and the hand is just reaching out for the phone just to check it really quick. And then as soon as the phone is up in front of my face, then that reading time is gone. And I will waste the next 20 minutes just scrolling through nothing. And then all of a sudden it's time to move on to the next thing that I need to do. And the book is just sitting there, you know, kind of face down. Stephen King, in his book on writing, A Memoir of the Craft, says, I was born in 1947 and we didn't get our first TV until 1958. So TV came relatively late to the King household, and I'm glad. I am, when you stop to think of it, a member of a fairly select group of people. The final handful of American novelists who learned to read and write before they learned to eat a daily helping of video bowl blank. Of course, in his book, he doesn't blank that out. He says, this might not be important. On the other hand, if you're just starting as a writer, you could do worse than strip your television's electrical plug wire, wrap a spike around it, and then stick it back into the wall, see what blows and how far. Just an idea. All right. I have a TV. I'm not recommending blowing up your TV. I'm not recommending plugging a spike into the wall and seeing what blows up. But it is true that the more screen time we get, the harder it's going to be to read. And the more that we have the screen on at home, the harder it's going to be for our kids to just be able to settle down and read. So the point is, anything we can do to limit our screen time and our kids' screen time will go a long way. Now, making sure that it's focused and limited, and we know when we're going to have the TV on and when we're going to have the TV off, as kids get older, you know, making wise decisions about access to video games and things like that, I think we need to just be intentional about it and make sure that it's not just sort of creeping in. Because reading takes space and it takes quiet, and we need to find ways to provide that. So, next, I just have a list of practical ideas, things that we have tried, things I've gotten from other people, things that I've read about. The goal is not for you to go away and try every single one of these in the next couple weeks or months, but you know, there might be some things up there that you hadn't considered, or maybe it'll stimulate some other totally creative idea that you have as a parent. The first thing that I think is actually very important is if you want your kids to love reading, you have to find ways to become a reader yourself. Now, a lot of values are more caught than taught, and if we believe it's important for our kids to love reading, then it's not just that we need to, you know, read more, it's that we have to find ways to love reading, to enjoy reading, to become readers. It's never too late to start. Now, like I said, I had that value and then I lost it and I had to get back to it, and I still have to fight for it. I still have to make sure that I'm not letting a lot of other things, and especially the screen, distract me. And so maybe you remember a time when you really loved reading. Maybe you've never had that experience, but I believe that it's possible to get there. And especially for those of us who are Christians, God will give us that ability to focus, to settle, to quiet our minds. And a few important points is, one, just read what you like. I've talked to people who very sincerely are like, well, you know, if I don't have time to get to spiritual books, how in the world could I read just a fun novel? Hopefully the research that I presented shows it's not a waste of time to read fun novels. That if you get a hold of a book that you can read really easily, then that's going to increase your enjoyment of reading. And also, the more you read, the better you're going to get at it. And the more you read, the faster you're going to get at it. And so just find a book that you like. I have a spiritual book that I read, and I try to read a little bit of that every day, but then I just have a book that I'm reading for no other reason than it's enjoyable. Now, I do think we can vary in quality. So if I'm reading perhaps a classic novel versus reading Twilight, that's going to be different. But I've read both. And there was a part of me that as I read the whole Twilight series, you know, it was because everybody else was reading it, and it's not a well-written book. I would not say it's great literature, but the characters were really interesting and it read really fast, and I read the whole thing. Right now, I started the audiobook of Game of Thrones, and I'm almost all the way through the first book, and it's so good. Those characters are so good. Yes, there's some sex in it, but there's some sex in almost all adult books that you can find. It's about as explicit as what I've found in like a Stephen King book or a John Grisham book. So if you like something, don't feel bad about liking it. Just read it. If you want, if you have just, you know, a novel that's just not that good at all, I don't know, put a cover on it. Who cares? Put it on your Kindle. Doesn't matter. Read what you like. I would also say read when you can. I think sometimes our standards are too high. My ideal is, oh, you know, when I get that hour on a Saturday afternoon and I can sit on the couch and I can have my book and I'll, you know, have a cup of coffee. I can't remember the last time I sat on the couch for an hour when my family was around. Or even if I am sitting there, it's because everybody else is around me and they're all talking to me at the same time. Reading in little snippets can go a long way. My husband makes fun of me because I read while brushing my teeth at night, because that electric toothbrush goes for 2 minutes. And that's 2 minutes of reading that I would not get in otherwise. So people who read a lot, what they do is they just leave reading material in various places. You know, leave it outside the bathroom, leave it next to your bed, just little snippets of reading. You know, you'll learn how to do that, and it'll actually improve your memory, because the next time you tune in for a little bit, you'll have to remember where it was that you were at in the book. The next main thing is to find ways to read out loud to your kids. I really think these are probably two of the most important ones. So becoming a reader ourselves, but also reading out loud to our kids. In the book, Bringing Up Book Monsters, they say one group of researchers followed parents and kids over a 5-year period, tracking how much time parents spent teaching literacy skills to their kids versus simply reading to them. So are we just, you know, reading out loud to them for fun, or are we really focused on helping them learn how to read? What they found is that children whose parents engaged in more explicit literary instruction, aka teaching them to read, scored highest on a reading test in first grade. No surprise there, right? So if we're really getting in there and teaching our kids how to read, they're going to do better in first grade. But here's what was surprising. By the third grade, the amount of teaching parents did no longer mattered. Instead, kids who were read to most often were the ones with the best scores. I think there's a temptation to feel like, you know, let's get in there and teach them the basics and maybe they can get a jump start on preschool and on kindergarten. And they're like, okay, that's fine if you want, and that's going to give them some early benefits. But long-term benefits come not from parents teaching their kids how to read, but just reading to them, which I like because it takes the pressure off. My kids learned how to read better from their teachers than they did from me. In fact, they learned everything better from other people than they do from me because it's just too stressful for me personally to get in there and teach my kids how to do stuff. I can't tell you the number of things that I tried to help my kids with, and they would just end up crying, and I would end up crying, and then, you know, one person would take one shot at it, and then all of a sudden they'd be really good at it. And I'm like, awesome, good for you. So it's like, you know, some moms and dads probably have some much greater gifting in this area than I do. I just didn't try to teach my kids how to read. I just read to them, my husband read to them, and it turns out that if you just do that, that's actually going to be better long term. They point out the more joyful you make reading, the more excited your child will be to read. So if you're reading to them for fun, it takes the pressure off, and it'll be for your enjoyment and for their enjoyment, and that's something that will last them for a long time. In the book Raising an Active Reader, Samantha Cleaver says, reading aloud for 15 minutes a few times a week is a way to take small steps toward the big goal of raising children who are critical thinkers, strong readers, and who love books. So again, let's reduce our goal here. The goal is not read aloud to my kid for an hour every day, but 15 minutes a few times a week is going to produce some significant benefits. Consider this. As long as we read to our children, we're keeping books in their lives. As parents, what we put in front of our kids matters. Prioritizing reading together, even beyond elementary school, keeps books and reading front and center. All right, my kids are 15 and 13 now. They're both taller than I am. They still love when I read to them. They still love when my husband reads to them. Scott just started a 1,000-page long Stephen King novel with the kids because they've already read a couple other ones. And I don't know if they're going to finish that before Sophie graduates high school. It's a big thing to tackle. But it's just an easy way for us to all spend time together and to bond. And honestly, it's easier than a lot of the other activities that we can do. And it settles them down. It's kind of amazing. So reading out loud to your kids, pick something that's fun, pick something that's enjoyable. C.S. Lewis, I wish I'd put the quote up there, talks about how there shouldn't be kids' books that are only enjoyable for kids. There should be good books, and then there should be books that are not worth our time. And so finding books that you like and reading out loud to them, as long as you're enjoying it, they're going to enjoy it too. Now, any reading counts. I was thinking about some early word time for me when Sophie was an infant. I was trying to get word time, and it's really hard to do when you have a 2-week-old. And so I remember sitting there at the table nursing her and just reading my Bible out loud to her. Now, I wasn't doing that because I was trying to give spiritual input to my 2-week-old. It's that I couldn't figure out how else to get word time. And I was like, well, I'll just try this because, you know, it was also a lot of mom guilt. Like, aren't I supposed to be interacting with my baby all the time? Which it turns out you don't have to interact with your baby all the time, but I felt like I should. And then it was actually really enjoyable. It slowed me down. It got me thinking about different passages in the Bible differently than if I was just reading them without speaking them out loud. So any reading You guys are probably too young to remember, there was this movie, Three Men and a Baby, and it was these three guys who end up with an infant, and there's a scene where one of the characters is holding the infant, and he's just reading an article out of Sports Illustrated on boxing. And the other guys are like, what are you doing? He's like, it doesn't matter. And it really doesn't matter. Like, read a cookbook to your kids. They don't care. They just want to hear the sound of your voice. You could let them do something while you read to them. You know, the idea that they're just going to sit quietly while you're reading, that's not what kids do. Coloring books, Play-Doh, Legos, watercolors, which is not going to make it a calm time, but kids often pay attention better when they're moving, especially boys. So is there something else that they can do? I don't know about you guys, sifting through Legos, that constant sound of the Legos moving, that's like an earworm for me, and it burrows right in and it really bothers me. I just had to find a way to get over it so that my son especially could pay attention while we were reading to them. And then see if they want to act things out when they're younger. I wish I could have found a picture of it. It's too old at this point. But there was one book that my husband was reading to the kids, and they were setting up some of the battle scenes in the book. And so, you know, this stuffed animal was this, and these slippers was this wall. And, you know, they were making it visual, and the kids got really into it. So whether it's setting up the scene, whether it's becoming the characters, you're trying to find ways to help your kids connect with it. And again, it's going to help their attention spans. Now, I like reading as fast as possible, and you're not going to be able to do that if you're reading out loud to your kids, because they're going to want to ask questions, they're going to want to make it more visual, so it'll slow things down. But the goal is not to read as many books as possible to your kids. The goal is to spend some time with them and to make it enjoyable. I was also trying to brainstorm ways that you could get access to good books. You have so many resources that are freely available to you that you can get help from. The first one, of course, is the library. The Columbus Library is one of the better systems in the country, because you can go online and reserve books from any of the participating libraries in the greater Columbus area, and they will deliver that book to the library of your choice and hold it for like a week and a half. And you just have to go in and pick it up, and they will remind you every couple of days that you've got a book waiting for you. The library here is awesome. There are story times where people who love to read to kids will read to a whole group of kids, and they don't care if all the kids are moving around and screaming. They're going to power through that. And that also is just a way to, you know, be exposed to other books and also to get around other kids. There's the book reserves, like I said. An almost infinite number of books are available, either for you as the parent or for your kids. Librarians love to talk to kids about books. So if you're not sure what your kid would like, just have them go talk to the librarian. The librarian will ask them, well, what are some books that you have read? What are some things that you like? And then they can suggest other books. Now you go into the kid area, and they have really good knowledge of all the different kid books that are out there. Now, if your kid's not old enough yet, you can explain what your kid likes. Well, trucks, okay, here's an awesome section on trucks. Oh, they like, you know, ponies, here's an awesome section on ponies. And, you know, the new motto for the, one of the new mottos for the Columbus Library is more gush, less hush. So when you go to the library now, they want kids running around and yelling and screaming, and they think it's really fun. It's not supposed to be this really quiet place anymore. They want it to be a place where people feel like they can come and spend time. Also, I would suggest getting your kids their own library cards when they get old enough. Then they feel like they're the ones checking out the books. These are their books. I think by the time our kids were 3 or 4, they each had their own library card. They now have their library card numbers memorized. Doesn't even matter if they lose the card. You can also keep the number in your phone, so you can just punch it in if you forget the card. You might need to switch it at some point. Our daughter just got a regular library card. They gave our son a kid library card, which limits the number of books you can check out. I don't know if they still do that, but we had to switch it because Matt wanted to check out like 15 picture books, and he can only get 10 or something like that. But I found that my kids really liked that. They felt like, this is my library card and these are my books that I'm getting, and it just felt really cool to them. Summer reading programs at the library are super helpful. once our kids are old enough to kind of understand incentivizing. It just gives them a goal, makes them feel like they're accomplishing something. It's just silly little prizes that they give them, but they, you know, started at the end of the school year and it goes all the way through the summer. And when you go, there's other kids sitting there handing out the prizes. And so it just makes it seem like a really big deal. And they will take it even down to ages like 2, I think. So that's something to definitely take advantage of. Another resource are the teachers that your kids have. My son just didn't really like reading as much. He gravitated towards really, really easy books that were below his reading ability. And no matter what I suggested, he just would not go with it until he got into third grade. And the Calumet third grade teacher, Dave Lesline, was the one who got him into the Warriors series about cats that battle each other. And I mean, there's like cat battles where cats are dying, and he loved it because it just seemed cooler than some of the little kid books that he could get a hold of. So teachers want to help your kids learn to love reading as well. If you go into a preschool or a kindergarten classroom, it's full of books. And so teachers often can suggest things that your kids would be willing to try that, again, if you suggest it, they might not be into. There's also your friends and your kids' friends. Find out what books they know about that they like. Try those. See if there's anything that their kids are especially into. You know, I was aware of certain books and I would hear about certain things, but talking to other people, you're just trying to expand what you're exposed to and different ideas. And I feel like it's my job to steal as many good ideas as possible. So ask people about it and see what's working for them, both in terms of content, but also different ideas that they have about, you know, things that they've tried to read more themselves, but also ways that they've gotten their kids reading. James Patterson, the novel, says there's no such thing as a kid who hates reading. There are kids who love reading, and there are kids who are reading the wrong books. So we just need to try a lot of different things to see what our kids like and what they enjoy, and not give up because it feels like they don't like reading. Another thing I was reading that was really important is to have books accessible in our house, to make sure that they can go get a book when they want, so that they see books lying around. In the book, The Read Aloud Handbook, this is one of the classics on reading to kids, Jim Trelase says, the mere presence of books can often be enough, not 200 of them or even 50, but a dozen books to call your own. Now, if we say that we want to be readers, but then there's not books lying around, that's going to be a contradictory message. We want our kids to see books on the shelf, books lying around, you know, stacks of books in various places. Elizabeth Wilson says, to be at home with books, children need book-loving homes. And I feel like I'm going to fill my home with something. Might as well fill it with books. And so how do we get a hold of books? Well, obviously, there's the library. And, you know, they just give you those for free. All you have to do is bring them back. And in fact, just so you know, the library no longer has any late fees. So if you feel like, oh my gosh, I can't go to the library because of that $20 late fee that's sitting on my account. First of all, I don't know what they do about the old ones, but now all they do is keep telling you it's overdue, it's overdue, it's okay, you can't have any more until you bring that one back. But they don't charge you anything. So that's helpful for people like me. But besides the library, there's the book boxes that are all over the city. Take a book, leave a book. Facebook, if you just look up free little libraries, they'll pinpoint all the places in Clintonville where people just have boxes of free books sitting out in front of their house. So some of them are adult books, but a lot of them have kid books that you can take. And, you know, we would collect books, so it's not that hard to go through and pick out 5 books that you don't want anymore and put it in the library book box and then take one out. There's also library book sales. These are my downfall. You know, any of the Columbus libraries, they'll have one once a quarter where it's a whole room full of books, and they're like, each one for $1. And I'm like, $1? And these are library quality books. So there's, you know, they haven't been used in any, just for reading. So there's no underlining or anything like that. And I can't let myself go to those anymore because I'm like $1 for each book and I'll come out with a stack of books. And it's like, I got all of these for $10. And my husband's like, you haven't even read the ones you have yet. But this is a great resource. And so you can just check at the local libraries. Also, it's not just the quarterly sales, but if you go to a lot of local libraries, they'll just have a shelf full of books that either people have donated that they don't need or library books that they had too many copies of that they'll just put on the shelf. And again, $1 to $2 for those books. If you are trying to become a reader and you want a hard copy, the library shelves can be a great place if you actually want to own some of them. And then what about birthdays and Christmas? Now, is this what we're asking for our kids? Now, I don't think it has to be just books, but I had so many people who wanted to give my kids gifts, and if I let them buy just whatever, we would end up with all of these toys that we didn't really want. Now, there are many toys that we got for birthdays and Christmas, and my kids love getting toys and all sorts of cool things, so I'm not trying to say books only. But wouldn't it be great if we just had a list of books that we would love to get, because people want to get us something. So do you have your own Amazon wish list of books you'd love to have? Do you have a list for your kids, books that you would love to get for them? Because if you want new ones, then they can get a little bit expensive, and ask for them, and people would happily get those for you. I do want to put out there that boys are different than girls when it comes to reading. We have two kids. Our daughter is older than our son. So my husband started reading to her when she was pretty young, and then he tried to do the same with our son, and it did not work because Sophie loved to snuggle up, and she did like having the cup of tea, and she could sit still and be read to for sometimes like an hour. And we would get Matt for 5 minutes, and then he'd be bouncing around and moving around, and you know, we weren't taking a different approach with him. And we needed to. Now, there are some boys who love to sit quietly and read. And there are some girls who don't like to, you know, sit. So I'm not trying to say all boys are different than all girls. But in general, boys are going to be different than girls. One, they need male role models. There's a lot of research that shows that boys just don't see men reading as much. So if you are a guy here, find ways to read so that your kids see you doing it. If you're a mom here, find ways to free your husband up so that he can sit and read for periods of time so that your kids see him doing that. Boys also like different kinds of books. You know, they like books with action. They like books with conflict, whereas girls tend to like books with characters and emotion and drama. So we need to find books that, you know, like I said, the cats that killed each other, that was the thing that really got my son. They like graphic novels. They like nonfiction books more than girls do, oftentimes because they have a lot of pictures in them. So things that are more visual can be really helpful. And also, like I said, they won't always sit quietly. What we actually noticed, what kind of crystallized this in my mind was our son read better when he was camping because he could be outside and he was in a hammock. So he was moving constantly. So, you know, when I think about curling up and reading, you know, you just think about what girls do, where it's, you know, find a nice soft spot and sit quietly, whereas, you know, boys, outside, weird positions. My son does really well when he's sitting on a yoga ball and being read to or reading. That can't always be in my field of vision because he's bouncing. And I'm like, all right, that's enough for me. So we leave it in. We have a yoga ball. It's in the basement. I hate the yoga ball. It's huge. It gets in the way. And like I said, he and I can't be in the same room because it just starts to get on my nerves. But he'll go down to the basement for like 45 minutes now and sit on his yoga ball and just bounce. So finding ways to let them move as they're trying to read can be really helpful. A few other mediums that I was thinking about. One is, have you ever tried listening to audiobooks with your kids? We had a trip several years ago. I can't even do the math right now. Matt was probably only about 6. So again, short attention span, very active. We were out at Glacier National Park. And to do hikes meant about a 45 to 60 minute drive in the morning before any other movement, which for a 6-year-old boy, that's like torture, right? We just randomly threw on the Harry Potter audiobook one, and he loved it. In fact, it was really easy to get the kids in the car really early every morning to hit the road so we could get to the parking lot before it filled up. And they looked forward to it because they were listening to an excellent audiobook. If you guys have not listened to the Harry Potter audiobooks, I know there's a big debate. Do you like the American, you know, voice actor or the British voice actor? We listen to the British guy first, so that's the guy that we like. I know both of those men are able to do different voices for every single character. And it just brings the book to life in a way that's different than how I would read it. There were times when our kids were sick when they were little. For some reason, well, actually not for some reason, when I was young, I didn't like going to school because I didn't have friends, so I would get sick and I would stay home, and then that got reinforced because every time I stayed home, I would just sit in front of the TV. So I felt pretty strongly that unless my kids were actively puking, if they said they were sick and they needed to stay home from school, I was not going to let them get on the TV because I didn't want them to feel like, oh, well, if you stay home, you just get to watch TV. But then I still had other things to do, and they were supposed to be at school. And so then I'm like, what did I do to myself? Should I just let them watch TV? I just kind of spontaneously pulled up a YouTube audio version of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And it didn't have anything but just a picture of the book. And then it was the voice actor reading it. And, you know, my poor little sick kid could just lie there but have a book read to them. Because that's what they wanted me to do, was read to them. I'm like, I can't read to you all day. So I did. I had someone else do it. And they really liked it. So there's a lot that's available. Again, library has so many audiobooks. And you can just reserve those. And, yeah, sometimes there's a wait list, but they're really fun to listen to. I would also suggest finding ones that have movies, but to wait until after you read the book to watch the movie. Because if you're reading a book to your kids, you kind of want them to be in the tension of the narrative and to wonder what's going to happen. If they watch the movie, then they already know what happens, and there's nothing to wait for. But it's still fun to watch the movie and then talk about the differences between the movie and the book. So that can also be a way to get them to hang in there with the book, is to know that the movie is coming after that. And, you know, this can be even for some of the shorter books that are out there. I think they just did a movie of the BFG, which is one of Roald Dahl's books. And that book is really short, and it's really fun because of all the crazy words in it. So if your kid is not sure that they want to sit through a book, then telling them we'll watch the movie after the book can be a way to kind of increase their patience. And so as we're thinking about reading and becoming readers, I just wanted to put a final few things on your radar, sort of to summarize, but also hopefully as an encouragement. One is, you just need to find what works for you. You're going to read to your kid differently than somebody else will. You know, each spouse will have their own style. Each kid will have their own style. So I described some things today, but you might try that and feel like that is not working for me at all. That doesn't necessarily mean you're doing anything wrong. You are the parent. God has put you with this specific kid or kids, and he wants you to try to work with him to figure out what's going to work for your family. So different times of the day, I've heard about parents reading over breakfast. We actually, as a family, never really read at bedtime because my husband and I have a lot of things scheduled in the evening. So we got time with our kids well before bedtime. You know, after dinner was a pretty key time. But by the time it got to bedtime, it was like, okay, we need to get to bed, and then we're moving on to the next thing. And for years, I felt bad about that. Oh, aren't you supposed to read to your kids at bed? Well, we never did. We read to our kids at other times, and that's okay. So your goal is not to have the family that everybody else has. Your goal is to have your family, and your family is going to look like what it's supposed to look like. And if it looks different from other people, that's okay. So find what works for you as a family. Find what works for you as a person. My husband loves reading big, long books to our kids. Not me. That's not my style. I have found shorter books with discrete chapters where you can read one chapter and then, you know, 3 weeks later you can read a second chapter, and they're different enough from each other that you don't have to keep the flow of thought. And my kids like that too. You need to be under grace. Almost everybody that I talk to feels bad about their own personal reading, and they feel bad about how much their kids read. Maybe you don't feel that way, and that's great. Maybe you're already under grace about this. I had to fight for that, and I still have to fight for that. Wherever you're at, God is pleased with that, and he wants to grow you. We're trying to find ways to excel still more. You'll be in and out of season when it comes to attention span, when it comes to screen time, when it comes to focusing, when it comes to books as a value. And you know, if this is a time where you feel like it's going really well, praise God and find a way to be an encouragement to somebody else. If this is a time it's not going that well, that's okay. And God will be very patient with you. He has been very patient with me. And it's not hopeless. It's never hopeless, whatever situation that we're in. And then it's going to be chaotic. You've got little kids. We're not trying to come up with some peaceful solution where everybody just settles down and it's all really nice. Every time I tried to read to my kids, there's interruptions, they're fighting with each other, there's battles over who's going to sit where on the couch and which blanket is going to be used, and then inevitably something gets spilled. So again, this is not to come up with something that's going to just settle your family down and have it be nice and quiet. It's to get into books. And it's going to be loud, it's going to be messy, it's going to be difficult at times. But hopefully, a few things that I said today will convince you that it will be worth it. And if we continue fighting for this, if we continue striving for this, one day we'll see our kids sitting down with their own books that they've picked out themselves and reading them and enjoying them and being lifelong readers and lifelong learners.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.